This is Will's Band of the Week for April 24th, 2016. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett live in studio.
Hello.
And Chris live in studio.
I thought you're just going to like...
I decided to downplay it.
Just breeze by the fact that...
Yeah,
I'm on parole. I finally got out, so...
Yeah.
So the great thing is that this is going to be a three-hour podcast of Chris telling us what he's been listening to for the last 3 months or so.
Yeah, just right? Catching up on everything.
Yep.
So... Yeah, good to be back. I had, it took me a while to find the house.
Your comfy chair is gone. I think what happened? Now you're just like in a...
Yes.
I thought he was getting too comfortable in that chair.
Yeah.
So we need to get, we have to have him propped up so he stays more alert.
No, I've learned my lesson not to take another 6 months off.
Good. All right. Yeah, I hope.
Yeah, I think the last one I was on was the year end.
Oh, my goodness.
Is that right?
That's
crazy.
I believe so, yeah.
Wow.
That's inexcusable. Now, Barrett and I have talked about how you've been in probation, though, so it's kind of like, you're going to come back on our terms. That's why we had that meeting before we started recording.
Mm-hmm. I noticed Barrett was here far before I was.
Right.
You guys were scheming.
We have a list of a whole bunch of things where if you say them, you're gone. But we can't tell you what they are
because
we have to see if you've truly changed.
That all makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yep. Well, let's see. I got to queue up my props so the podcast sounds professional.
Yeah.
Well, we're recording this on Thursday, April 21st. So this is fresh on our minds right now.
And now it's time for the Death of the Week.
Probably the biggest death since David Bowie, for sure.
Yep, I think we can say that
without qualification. Yeah, not the death of the week. It's like the death of the...
month.
You know what? I'm going to say this is bigger than Bowie. I kind of know it is. Because we are obviously talking about Prince, who died today at age 57.
Mm-hmm.
His Bowie was still... I mean, he was popular, but he was still all kind of a niche... but Prince was universally listened to and universally loved. I'm going to go on record saying Prince is more popular than David Bowie.
I think that is so far off base that I'm a right-handed pitcher with a slow pickoff move. I lobbed it over the first base.
And I'm out.
You're out.
Well, we didn't do the music journalism to check the sales records.
Sales schmales.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily, that's not what we want to look at anyway.
Do you think a lot of African Americans listen to David Bowie?
Probably. I have no idea.
You'd think it would be in obviously lower numbers than Prince.
Right, because Prince, I mean, universally across cultures, across races, across, genres, I just think he's...
You can say that about Rihanna. I mean, does that make her bigger than or better than David Bowie?
Well, we didn't say anything about better. We said just bigger, more... what did I say? It was the biggest death of the... It was the death of the half decade? I think it's bigger.
I don't.
Did CNN do a full day on David Bowie?
David Bowie was 10 years older, too. You know?
Yeah.
By the way, on CNN, Stephen Thompson, our friend.
I did see that alluded to on Twitter, but I didn't see it.
I did see it.
He was on CNN?
Yes, he was on there discussing the role of Prince in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, Chris, the next time you're on MSNBC, you can talk about Prince.
I've never been on TV.
I was on MSNBC.
Yeah.
We mentioned
Barrett
that on the podcast.
Barrett texted me.
Oh.
He said, I've got this new show on, and it's Chris Schneider and who was the other guest? It was
Michael Steele.
Yeah, Michael Steele.
Who, of course, is a puppet from The Daily Show. He was. Did you ever see that skit where he's like?
No.
They had a Michael Steele puppet that would often make an appearance on the show.
That's funny.
But yeah, so.
Well, Barrett was really disappointed that you didn't plug the podcast. You should have been able to think of a way, right?
yeah, totally. I mean.
A national audience, know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I had to watch it 3 times. I'm like, I must have missed it. There's no way he wouldn't have said something. But sure enough.
Yeah, talking about the Wisconsin election, I should have just talked about David Bowie the whole time.
You should have.
The role of David Bowie on the Wisconsin election.
Yep.
I mean, yeah.
The primary.
You know, what if, you said that the news coverage from CNN was indicative of his importance over David Bowie. You know who would have gotten even more coverage? Like, what if Justin Bieber had died at his age? That's the thing. It's the age is coming into it. And, you know, I don't remember what CNN was doing about David Bowie, but...
Well, I'm just going to object to Justin Bieber's name even being brought into the conversation.
These guys are both dead now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed.
Justin Bieber.
It's been a rough year. It's been a rough year for deaths of the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has. All right. Well, we got to do a little tribute, right? So I'm going to start with what was always my favorite Prince song, When Doves Cry. Yeah, it's just catchy.
It's catchy,
you know, and it probably illustrates Chris's point that I would like that because it's not really the style that I would normally listen to, right? It's a expanding of the genre to appeal to just so many people, and I'm kind of nostalgic about it because I lived in Minneapolis during those years, like from 1984 to 88. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
when I hear that, I can just picture. I haven't seen the movie in forever, but him riding his purple motorcycle,
absolutely,
like through the woods around Minnetonka and stuff.
Yes,
it's just like it's so, you know, it just brings back that movie to me.
It just so happens I watched the movie just like a few months ago,
mm-hmm.
and it's not a very good movie. I mean, the music is great, obviously, but it's
like a music video, basically,
right? And if you go back, I mean, there are scenes where he's like beating up his girlfriend and stuff, and it was like abuse. I mean, not that that shouldn't be in movies. It's probably in like every Scorsese movie, but
right.
I don't know. I just don't think it aged that well. And I know at the time, you know, people were setting up like there was a big rivalry between Prince and Michael Jackson. Like those were like the two, you know, two sides of the same coin or whatever. Kind of like, you know, the Beatles and the Stones, Prince and Michael Jackson at the time. And I got to admit, I was kind of a Prince guy. I mean, I kind of sided with Prince on that, just because at the time, like the music that he was making, and Purple Rain came out when I was 11 years old, and you know, just because of the dirty content,
mm-hmm.
just kind of like unlocked something in me. Like, not like turned me into a man or whatever, but it was just like, you know what? There's actually like art out there that isn't really subject to like my parents' consent. Mm-hmm. like there's stuff out there that you know, that says dirty words and talks about sex and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. Especially his early albums, Controversy, Dirty Mind, and his self-titled one, his first one. But yeah, I mean, when I was 11 years old, I knew every word to the Purple Rain album, even though if I didn't know what a lot of the stuff meant.
Right.
Like, wow.
I knew what was going on.
Your parents would have been shocked.
Well, the movie itself, I obviously didn't go see in a theater. And I've, like on Twitter, I've seen people today who are my age saying, I remember standing in line to go see Purple Rain at the theater. I'm like, you were 12 years old. Of course you weren't.
Yeah, I don't buy that at all.
So, I went over to a friend's house who had much more permissive parents and watched it either on video or like on HBO or something, and came back and I let it slip to my mom that I had actually seen the movie, and she flipped out and like called the other parents and told them, like yelled at them for letting me watch Purple Rain just wow. because of the boobs parts and, you know, the swearing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So
wow.
Yeah.
And you were on like basically a downward spiral from that point forward too.
It's been smut ever since. It proved
your mom correct.
When I was much older, when I was 13, you know, I devolved into a world of
yep.
The dark world.
I learned to like boobs and stuff. Like I mean that's totally unnatural, I know.
Yeah.
This is all from a movie.
Right.
And wow.
I don't mean to like let everybody know that I have a naked lady fetish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm probably, you know, giving away too much here, but yeah, I mean, so I mean,
That's when it all started.
It was kind of my introduction to the world of ladiness.
Well, no wonder you like him so much more than you like David Bowie.
Yeah, David Bowie never anything like that.
Opened a whole new world to you.
Right.
You know.
He baptized me in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
Yes.
All right, Chris, I know you've got a pick, so what's it going to be?
Yeah, and this is going to seem like kind of a weird pick just because of all of his great early albums. But I just, if I had to pick one song that's probably my favorite of his, it's from the album Around the World in a Day, and it's Raspberry Beret. Percussion, like that sound, that percussion sound became like a whole, you know, Minneapolis R&B sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and even some people still lift that today. You know, I've heard modern artists try to replicate it.
Yeah, I think we might have talked about this before. I'm pretty sure that's a slowed down rim shot.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
You just
I always
some
trust
actual knowledge.
Trust
there.
Will when he yep. says stuff like that.
Yep. Try it sometime. Try it at home. A slowed down rim shot. Barrett, do you have a Prince pick?
I do. Mine is, it's kind of a cliche. It's his biggest song, Purple Rain. But I saw him in concert in 2004 at Summerfest.
Oh.
My friend Joe had an extra ticket, and you know, while I was really happy to go, I wouldn't have considered, you know, I wouldn't have been looking into getting a ticket aside from that. And when he, I mean, the whole concert was great. And he goes off and it's like, obviously he's going to do this as an encore. And he came back and it was just unbelievable. Like, I just, I've had very, very few, you know, concert experiences like that song. It just, you know,
just the way
blew
it, like,
the place up. It was insane.
The way it builds and it like crescendos and
yeah, just everything. The way, like, just that he's doing it, and you're like, oh my God, here I am. I'm watching this, you know. And, you know, I think by that time, you know, an artist that had been around as long as he had isn't always going to have made peace with the fact that most of his best work is behind him. That's what people want to hear. Mm-hmm. So I think there'd be a tendency on the part of a lot of artists to not end a show like that, you know. But he just seemed really at peace with his past and like, okay, maybe I'm not making something that as many people are going to like anymore, but I made this and it, you know, I'm going to blow everybody's mind by playing it. So it was fantastic. So let's play Purple Rain. So, yeah, I mean, everybody's heard that song a bazillion times, and maybe it's lost its power for a lot of people to resonate, but I don't think I ever heard that song where it wasn't exciting for me, you know?
Where it's just screaming at the end.
Yeah.
His best songs are the ones where he just, like, does that scream.
Yeah, and I don't know. This came out when I was, just before I was going into college. I just looked it up. It was, like, in July of 84, so... You know, a few weeks later, I was starting college, and that album was just everywhere. You couldn't get around it.
Yep.
And the fact that I liked it back then, as much as I did, was pretty unlikely, and it speaks to your point a little bit. But, you know, my fandom was kind of intense and pretty short. You know, I didn't then go back and buy his early stuff or get subsequent albums. It was... That was enough. It was just one bright, shining moment of super fandom, and then I've just always kind of liked that album since. But
so during the day, you know, people are tweeting out info and facts and figures about Prince.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and someone sent this out. On August 7th, 1982, Prince recorded both 1999 and Little Red Corvette, playing all the instruments on both. That was one day.
Yeah.
Where he recorded those two songs.
Wow.
I think we've said this in the past, like when he was on the Super Bowl halftime show, how he's, as far as a all-around entertainer, musician, producer, writer, everything, he's the five-tool, you know, he's the young Mickey Mantle of rock and roll. Like, as good as, you just can't be any better. Like, his guitar playing, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right? You know, great singing voice, lots of good songs, including some performed by others.
Yeah, and that's the point that Stephen made on CNN, which was that he really helped along a lot of the careers of a lot of other people, especially women. You know, Apollonia and
Sheila E.
Sheila E. Yes, and Sinead O'Connor, of course, like really broke free when she did a Prince song, "Nothing Compares to You." Mm-hmm. Shaka Khan's biggest song, "I Feel for You," was a Prince song.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so a lot of Prince songs helped a lot of people.
There was some story about Sinead O'Connor like getting into a big spat with him, though.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, if you go on Spotify now and play that album, that Sinead O'Connor album, "I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got,"
mm-hmm.
that song, "Nothing Compares to You," is blacked out because Prince still holds the rights. And there's nothing on Spotify or Apple Music or anything like that of his.
What about "Manic Monday" by the Bangles? Is that on Spotify?
We could check, see if that's on there.
Okay, let's see.
We're going to check Apple Music.
On the, in the meantime... What else can we say about, you know, Chris is recording with a purple windscreen. Is that what you call these things? Windscreens?
Yeah. Yeah.
On his microphone.
Yeah, I did not.
Kind of appropriate.
I did not make that connection, but thank you for doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Manic Monday is on here.
Is it?
Bangles.
That's not the original recording. Did you guys notice that?
I don't know. It's from the Greatest Hits album.
Yeah.
I did not notice that.
For sure.
Now, do we give him too much credit for not, because he didn't put out anything really worthwhile in the last 25 years?
I don't know. I mean...
I don't know either.
I'll bring this back to Sinead O'Connor. I think I talked about this on the podcast last year where a music critic was like, man, she hasn't done anything worthwhile since... And she's like... You know what? I know for a fact that you have not listened to all my records.
True. Yes.
So I'd have to say that about Prince. We could be completely wrong. You know, maybe on re-examination, everybody's going to be like, whoa, holy shit. How did we not listen to this Prince album from 2011?
Yeah.
I have no idea. But it does feel that way, that what you said is right.
He kind of dropped off the critical radar screen after Sign O' the Times, which is what like kind of his serious, you know, poverty album.
Yeah, what was it, like 88?
Yeah, it was 88.
That's a long damn time ago.
And then in like 91, he jumped back in with Prince and the New Power Generation with songs like Get Off and Diamonds and Pearls and stuff like that.
But yeah, I didn't even know those songs.
But that wasn't, that was my college and it wasn't that great. And then he was just Prince for 20 plus years.
Well, he was...
He was that symbol.
He was the artist, he was a symbol. Formerly known as Prince.
Taff Cap.
What was the...
Taff Cap. T-A-F. The artist formerly known
clever.
As Prince, Taff Cap.
I never heard that.
No, I didn't either.
But then in the end, he was the artist formerly known as Prince.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
And of course, he got a second life with the Dave Chappelle.
The basketball thing.
The basketball stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apparently, though, he was actually a good basketball player.
Indeed, he was. He actually had a brother that played at UW-Milwaukee.
He did?
Yes.
Wow.
That's interesting trivia.
How about that local angle?
Wow. Now, Prince was like 5'7" or something, right?
5'2".
Oh, really? I mean, he was short, so like really short. He must have been a point guard then, a lightning quick point guard.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think we should play some of 1999 just because I feel like it.
Don't worry. I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some fun.
not am just, I crazy or does that sound different too?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember that beginning part.
Well, that right.
Yeah. I don't think they played that there. On the radio. Yeah.
It may have edited that out. Of course, you heard a little Wendy and Lisa in there too.
Right, right.
And in the original, doesn't he say, when I woke up this morning, I thought this morning was Judgment Day?
Did it not say that?
No,
that
it said something different.
Oh. He just said the Judgment Day thing. I don't know. Anyway.
It's also, yeah.
That's just, you know, the nostalgic for me. That was like the height of popularity in Minneapolis in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't at all the Husker Du shows and all the Replacements shows, and you were actually listening to Prince?
Well, I was because it was on the radio. I can't profess that I was like a big Prince fan, but it was just all over the place.
That's what's so interesting about like the quote-unquote Minneapolis scene. Like any big city that has a scene, usually it's like a style of music. Like, you know, you go to Seattle and it's grunge or whatever and a certain style, but the Minneapolis, while all that stuff was going on, I mean, you had Husker Du, which was doing something different than the Replacements, and then you had the whole, Prince thing and the whole, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and all that. So you had, like, it was a scene, but it was a really diverse scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
although Detroit's a little bit like that, too, right?
Yeah.
Where you had Motown, and then you had kind of the, like, what are some of the other
Detroit bands? Like Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels stuff like that. MC5.
Yeah.
You're leaving off Soul Asylum, who sounded like the Replacements.
Oh,
yes. So much.
Yeah. So, everybody goes crazy on the social media talking about how they loved Prince and little tributes and stuff. But my favorite thing that I read today was a thing that Bob Mould wrote about Prince. And he just happened to be driving from his show in Madison last night to his shows this weekend at First Avenue, where Purple Rain was filmed. And so he wrote this nice thing. Said he didn't really know him personally, that he kind of met him a couple times, but it was really just kind of superficial. But he did some recording at his studio, and it's a very well-written, like, four paragraphs. So that's what I
read
recommend
it too.
Reading.
I liked it quite a bit.
Well, have we done justice to Prince?
I want to say one weird thing I read about him today. It was one of those things like, you know, at the bottom of you're reading an article on Slate or something, and at the bottom it's like, you know, these childhood stars grew up to be ugly. Or, you know, one of them today was like, these are really weird things about Prince. You know, it's kind of timely.
Click.
One of them was, so I clicked on it. A lot of them were, you know, once he had rented a mansion from Carlos Boozer.
Oh, yeah.
And then he, like, totally renovated the thing.
Just a renter. Yeah.
And he took out a wall in the master bedroom and made it into a hair salon. That's pretty weird. And then some other things of varying degrees of weirdness. But the one that struck me as unbelievably weird is that the people that worked for him were not allowed to talk to him or to look at him. So
that's
apparently one witness was there one day, and Prince says, "What's that guy looking at me for? Get him out of here."
Did he ask another guy that's not allowed to look at him? So the other guy's like looking away, and Prince is asking, "Why is that guy looking at me?"
Right? He's like, "Why is that guy looking at me?" And then he'd say,
"Don't look at
Prince,
me.
I can't look at you. I think you're talking to me, but I can't confirm it by looking into your eyes. So just tell me. Point to me." So that's kind of weird.
We've never mentioned before on the podcast that I actually don't let you guys look at me while we're recording.
That is true. I'm so used to it now. I don't even think about it.
You do usually have your back turned to us while Barrett and I, like, look at each other.
You guys have actual dialogue. I stare at the screen.
Today he's even behind that curtain. He doesn't always do that. But
that is a little weird.
The curtain.
That's a little weird. I think maybe he's not wearing pants or something.
That's got to be it.
I try to maintain a little professional distance. I can't let you guys think you're, you know, equal in stature.
Taking us down a peg.
Yeah.
We're living too high on the hog here with all this income from the the podcast.
So,
I'm not supposed to tell them that we're getting income from the podcast.
Thanks for a good career, Prince. Age 57 is a little early, but
how did he die?
A good one.
Like, from what I gather, he died from the flu.
Yeah, that's all they've said so far is that he just hadn't been feeling well.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the doctors that go jump on like cable TV as soon as somebody dies and just like speculate as to why they died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he didn't have a doctor like Michael Jackson's doctor. That would be bad.
Yeah, lawsuit forthcoming.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
I think he had Doctor Everything's Going to Be All Right. That was his primary care physician.
If that's true, that's probably why he's not with us anymore. Like the people that say laughter is the best medicine, that's why my dad died.
Yeah. But hopefully we paid fitting tribute to a musical giant.
Hope we did.
Indeed. I think he would be honored.
Keeping it moving.
Yeah.
That means I've got a live report. I just talked about Bob Mould being in Madison. Guess what? I was there.
Wow.
On assignment for the Will's Band of the Week podcast. And I can keep this review pretty short. Okay, you want to hear about Bob Mould last night?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He totally rocked.
Well, we better.
He totally rocked.
Yep. And he is a great aging rocker. It was almost like he was challenging the other aging rockers in the audience to kind of keep up with him. Because he put the pedal down and didn't let up hardly the whole hour and 15 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Threw in a couple Husker Du songs at the end. Flip Your Wig. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
So he threw in a couple Husker Du songs at the end. And they totally rocked. And, you know, the style that he's been playing lately in his last three albums, it all fits in pretty well with those old power pop Husker Du songs.
See,
and it was well received, and it was just really solid.
I feel like I saw him 20 years ago in Milwaukee, and he was like his album, his last Dog and Pony Show, I guess, had come out, and that was going to be it for him as far as rocking. Like he announced at that show, like, this is my retirement from being a rocker.
Right.
And he was just going to move on, and then he did like an electronic album after that, and I don't know. They all come home.
Yeah,
they all come back.
Mm-hmm. I saw him play a solo electric guitar show where he just rocked out with an electric guitar just himself, which was pretty cool in a way because you see this done, of course, on an acoustic all the time, but you usually don't see people rocking out an electric as a solo performance. So just kind of the uniqueness of that was pretty cool. That was sometime in the 90s. And then actually, I saw Husker Du in an old supermarket on Main Street in Oshkosh. It was like an abandoned supermarket.
That's where I saw Black Flag and the Dead Kennedys.
They had punk shows. And mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was just like if you took a grocery store and you just took out everything inside it. So it's just this giant like concrete floor, and one end of it, there's a stage. So I saw Husker Du then, and then I saw this Bob Mould solo electric thing in the 90s. And then, Barrett, you and I saw Bob Mould at that Madison
Forward Festival, was
yeah,
it called?
I think that's what it was called. And it was weird because he had a bass player and himself and no drummer. And I was thinking, you got to have a drummer. You just got to have a drummer. Come on. So, and then two or three years ago, Grant and I went to see him in Milwaukee with his current band, and it was great. And this one last night was probably even a little bit better because now he's got three really good albums in a row. So he's got a lot of recent stuff that that he can play that's just solid. So definitely a positive review from me.
I too have a live report.
I know what it is. I know because you divulged on social media.
I did. I posted a photo.
Uh-huh. So let's hear about it.
So last week I went to go see Wolf Alice.
Yeah, and we talked about them like a year ago or something.
And it was good.
All right.
There's my review.
Okay.
Good.
It was good.
What kind of crowd did they have? Was it a big crowd or not?
It was not like the hipster crowd that we usually see at the shows that we go to.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of kind of a mainstream crowd.
Hmm.
A lot fewer horn-rimmed glasses. A lot fewer, you know,
douche beanies.
A lot fewer mustaches, a lot fewer, you know, people that clearly, like, make their own soap and stuff like that. So it was, you know, I saw a couple of people there that I wouldn't have expected to be at, like, an alternative show in Madison.
Where was it?
It was at Majestic.
Hmm.
As was Bob Mould. And I'll add that it seemed to be like, I didn't hear that it sold out, but it had to be pretty close because it was a big crowd, a really good crowd.
Wow. That's and, cool that he can still pull a crowd like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And some aging rockers for sure, but that's what you'd expect, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I felt better. I fit in pretty well, I thought.
Were there any young people?
Oh, man.
I don't mean like Chris. I mean actual young people.
Right.
Hey, wait a minute.
You know, that's I a... don't... It,
oh, here comes the dog.
It didn't seem like there were very many like 25-year-olds. Mm-hmm. It seemed like, you know, maybe a fair number in their 30s. Definitely an older crowd. And yeah, I went with some aging rocker friends. So it was all good. All good. I was going to contrast, actually, if you look at people who are actually rocking and they're, let's say they're over 50, right? I know I'm the resident Guided by Voices fan, but I was, in my mind, I was comparing Bob Mould and Robert Pollard, and I was thinking, okay, in the last, like, 4 years, Bob Mould has put out three albums, like, the three albums that have been 2 years apart, right? And they're totally solid, really good albums, just rocking, right? In that same time span, Robert Pollard has put out about 15 albums. And you could... The thing is, if he only had some, you know, editing ability or self-control, you could probably take the very best songs off of those 15 albums and you could come up with three albums that are about as good as the Bob Mould albums. So it's just a very interesting contrast in approaches, but I really think that Bob Mould has a better approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't record everything that every idea that he ever thinks of, and he's now come up with three really good albums in a row. So there you go, Bob Mould.
So wait, I want to go back to just briefly. Do you have anything, one more word besides good? Give me one more adjective.
Oh, about Wolf Alice? Yeah.
It was, I mean, it was a really tight set. It's almost like when I went to go see Vampire Weekend, like when they were first out.
Mm-hmm.
Like they first came out with their album and they literally played every song on their album and nothing else because they really didn't know any other songs.
Right.
And it was kind of like that. I mean, they kind of went through their album. There was maybe one or two songs, but it was really tight. There wasn't a whole lot of banter. And it was, it was pleasant. It was good.
Yeah.
I've seen
a lot of shows like that too, where you think like, what would I even say about this? I'm enjoying it, but. Not much to say.
Yeah. If you like the album, you'd like the show. She's yeah. really pretty and
no surprises.
Yeah.
Do they let the guy sing the song? The song Swallowtail.
Yes.
I really like that
and
song.
And it's the drummer, which kind of surprised me.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was waiting to see which guy was about to sing, and the drummer turns around and starts starts singing while playing.
Yeah, so that's a good one.
Phil Collins style.
Yeah. Did he then do that? In the Air Tonight riff?
No. Georgia Hoobly style.
Yep. Okay. Chris, you've got an album to tell us about.
Hey, I do. What album are we talking about here?
This one that's all highlighted in yellow on the screen.
Yes. So, longtime listeners of the podcast, both of them, probably know that I'm a big Laura Gibson enthusiast. About a year ago, maybe it was a little more than a year ago, her apartment building in Brooklyn burned down, and she lost everything, including a lot of her instruments and stuff. And somebody did a Kickstarter to pay her to get a new apartment and new instruments. And I think she actually ended up doing really well on that. And I gave money as well. And so this is her first album after that. And I think it is one of her best, actually. And that's saying a lot because I am a big fan. And I think it alternates very well between kind of her older style, which is just kind of her acoustic, and then, you know, some new instrumentation, kind of just experimenting with kind of different textures and different beats and things like that. So, but you know, her bread and butter is just kind of the acoustic type of stuff, but. For an example of kind of what I was talking about with her more experimental stuff, I'll start with a song. It's called Caldera, Oregon, and here it is. Sweet. Of course, is from Portland, Oregon, which is probably the reference there. I don't know where Caldera, Oregon is or what that refers to, but it was funny. A couple years ago, kind of when Obamacare was getting up and going, she did an ad for Obamacare to like get young people to sign up mm-hmm. when they were trying to get people up, and it was like the most preposterous thing. Like if you watch the show Portlandia and you know kind of, you know, about Portland or whatever, it was the most Portland thing that you've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like her singing like some really fey song while like these cartoon birds are flying around her and stuff.
Oh,
it
God.
Was like, it was, you know, you couldn't have written anything better to make fun of Oregon more, but yeah.
So the album is called Empire Builder, mm-hmm. and that's an Amtrak train. And apparently she took that train from Portland when she didn't move to Brooklyn for indie rock stardom. She moved to Manhattan to go to grad school.
Hmm. See? And these are the stories that you get from people who aren't huge stars. Like,
yeah, and then when she's on the train, of course, I'm sure she wrote the entire album on the train, right? That makes the story better, at least.
My
go with that.
Research is limited to looking up on Wikipedia, you know, and it says, like, the Associated Acts. One of them is Calexico. They've got to be playing on that song.
You think so? That sounds like
Yeah, that sounds exactly like Calexico.
Hmm.
So I'm going to look it up. Empire Builder.
Well, she was here a few years ago, and I saw her with the, the Portland, it was an orchestra, or Portland violins, or Portland cellos. Something like that. I probably had too much to drink, but I met her afterwards and took a picture. And of course, the photo of me and her, I have my eyes closed. So like, totally like, man finally gets to meet, you know, favorite female artist and closed his eyes during the photo.
You'll get
totally
another chance.
Yeah, she's gonna be here soon.
Mm-hmm. She's coming to Spring Green in May and then to Madison in June.
Yeah,
Wonder
what that Spring Green deal is gonna be like.
That's that Shitty Barn session series.
Oh, is she doing a Shitty Barn
thing? She's doing one of those, yeah.
Oh, wow. That might be worth going to. Because I've kind of always wanted to go to the Shitty Barn.
Yeah. I think that would be a good family environment, too. Not that that's...
To go to a place called the Shitty Barn?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, not maybe like for your kids, but that's kind of the impression I always got.
Well, so, what is that? It's just like a... People pick shitty barns and go and play.
No,
them,
it's all in one spot.
It's
all
a specific
the time.
Barn where they have
and
shows.
And it's kind of like, you know, it's not like you're sitting on a hay bale and, you know, there's a manure spreader parked next to you. I haven't been there, but it's
probably,
cleaned up.
It's probably kind of nice. And so the shitty part is just a self-deprecating
food safe
thing.
And stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the way that we always call you like a shitty podcaster.
Oh!
Right.
It's just
but
like,
we're just kidding when we say that.
Kidding.
You're being ironic.
Right.
Exactly.
Because it's so far from the truth.
Right.
That nobody could possibly think
while
that we mean
I'm
that.
Actually here until I leave. It's like,
okay.
But.
Let's play the title track, Empire Builder.
Awesome.
Thank you. is not an escape, but I don't know how to hold someone without losing my grip. You'll say I was bound to leave since I first stepped across your border, since I crawled into your skin. Thought I heard you whisper in the dark that you knew where the light would be. Thought I saw your shape against the black. Thought I felt you moving beside me. We are not alone. We are more alone than we've ever been. So hurry up and lose me. Hurry up and find me again. So I'll pass lumber mills, I'll pass the coal mines and the parks and the dried up oil fields. I'll pass a thousand lonely pines that bend their back against the sun. But I'll mistake the station birds for the sound.
Laura Gibson.
Yep.
It's not Laura Veers, and it's not Laura...
Who's Marling.
Marling, yeah.
She is in the holy triumvirate of Lauras.
Yep.
The leading Laura.
Yep. Yeah. And every time he used to talk about that, I'd throw in another one. Maybe it was Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
She had some pipes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do we have another pick from this album?
Yeah, I can play another one if you'd like.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's see. The Search for Dark Lake is a good song. We'll go with that.
Just like a song, just like a song, but gone swinging just beyond my will. I'll be crying, just be still, be still, be still, be still.
Should also mention that you recall the last podcast I was on at the year end, I think 8 of my 10 albums were female related or female singers led bands, and so far this year has been more of the same. It's been I like this album a lot. I like La Sera, which you guys talked about a couple weeks ago.
I like more and more all the time.
Like that a lot. Petal is a woman who I haven't been on here to talk about, but I really like her album.
You mentioned me liking Heinz.
I love Heinz, which you guys also talked
about.
Yeah,
I like Heinz a lot. Yep.
So yeah, I mean, it's another run on female singers again.
I don't know. You got to get your manhood back, Chris.
I know.
I'm trying to get it back.
I'm like, who's the Canadian Prime Minister?
He's Trudeau.
Like, yeah, Justin Trudeau. I'm like a walking Tinder profile. Like, he says he does, like, he knows quantum physics, and he does yoga and all this stuff.
Right.
It's like, I'm a feminist. Like, just stop with that.
He likes to hang out with his buddies. And
you're just jealous. They're
in a book club and a, you know, they meet at a wine bar for the book club.
What a guy.
Right, dude. Yeah. No way. Just, come on.
Just stop, Justin Trudeau. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to something a little more manly. Let's talk about
that shouldn't be hard.
The new Parquet Courts album.
We can talk about the new. That's going.
It's going in a more manly direction. Right?
Definitely.
I guess
Chris, you're excused.
Yes, I should just leave now, I guess.
So we can do a very quick bio on Parquet Courts. They were from Texas originally, and then guess what they did? They moved to Brooklyn for indie rock stardom. Yep. And now they've got, well, they're kind of indie rock stars, right? If you can call indie rockers stars. Yeah. They're not like living in a mansion or anything.
They're on par with, like, you know, Dive.
Yeah, like that.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah.
Minor stardom.
I think this is approximately their fourth album, although they had an EP and then they had a thing where they spelled their name differently, but I guess it still counts as a Parquet Courts album. So this one's called Human Performance. So let's play some of it and then we'll talk about it. I'll play the title track.
I know exactly where I was when I first saw you, the way I see you now through these eyes, waiting to retry. Those pristine days I recall so fondly, so few are trials when a life is. I never felt it, I never heard it. I know I loved you, did I even deserve it when you returned it? There's no suspicion, no hesitation, believing through the eyes of sure adoration.
Parquet Courts.
You know, I listened to this album a good number of times, and I really want to like it. I'm kind of coming around, and I like about half of it. That song I like quite a bit. You know what it sounds like to me? You know the Canadian band Sloan?
I remember them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're still around, and I don't, you know, they have so many albums that kind of dropped off a while ago, but
it
sounds a bit like that. If I can make a pick, I'm going to pick number 7.
It's called Captive of the Sun.
Thank you.
Okay, so I learned this album while running and walking the dog, and I miscounted. This is not one I meant to play. But I'm glad that it did play. That's an example of, a song that just sucks. There's nothing to recommend about that song.
So you don't
terrible.
Like it, huh?
No. I give that, that's enough to, when I like an album, I have to, there can't be any real dogs on it. I'll mark an album way down for having something. I can't get around this. I just don't like it at all.
Did we screw up the song order because the numbering? Because
I don't,
track one is a bonus track. So I wonder if, your number seven was actually...
Well, I don't know, but it's, I'm happy for having played that pick because it kind of underscores my ambivalence about it. I like the one that you picked. That one I think is horrible.
I'm gonna give a little contrary view. I like that song. I put this album on, and I really liked their first album quite a bit. And then their last couple, maybe that was their second, actually, the one that kind of broke them. Something Gold, right? What's that album called?
I can just picture the one with the orange animals and pieces.
Yeah, I think it's that one. Yeah. So then their last couple albums, they seem to be doing dirgy, 7-minute slow dragging stuff, and I just couldn't keep up with it. And I thought, last couple albums I liked parts of them, kind of like you're saying about this album. But I put this one on, and maybe it just was the low expectations or whatever, but I really like it. I like just about the whole thing. Sometimes they do that kind of shouting, and sometimes it's talking, and I just think it has a very good variety of styles, and just for me, the whole thing kind of works.
There's a song on Beck's Mellow Gold album from 1993 to 1994 that has that same kind of talking cadence, type of, and maybe it leads you somewhere, maybe it doesn't, and it kind of doesn't in that song.
Right.
But, it just kind of reminded me of the same style.
So,
yeah, it's written, the words are in this weird meter that...
Right.
I don't know.
So, track one is a bonus track. Now, why do you do that is my question. More specifically, I think it's kind of cool that they put the bonus track number one instead of number 12 or whatever. But why do you put a bonus track on the digital streaming? It's like you get the bonus if you actually don't buy the CD, but then if you buy the CD, then you don't get the bonus.
Maybe,
shouldn't it be the other way around?
Maybe if you bought the album,
you'd get the code for
it's
the
just called,
download.
What is it called? So it's called Already Dead, and then in parentheses, bonus track.
Right.
Maybe that's just like a smart-assy name for it.
Somewhere I looked at the track listing for the CD, though, and the CD starts with the song Dust.
Anyway, so much for that theory.
I think the bonus track is pretty good, so let's play it. Already Dead.
Wish them well. they pass on through.
Apologies for the weird audio there. The mixer's kind of freaking out. So when you have a low-budget studio, that's what happens from time to time. So anyway, yeah, I just think that's an interesting creative track.
Yeah. Like that one to me just sounds like a Pavement song.
Huh?
And that's what I like about it.
Well, in the beginning, it sounds like
Stephen Malkmus, but then the woman comes on with the, you know, the soothing voice.
Ordering you what to do.
Yeah. Then it stops sounding so much like Pavement, but I think that that's kind of the primary influence is Pavement for this band.
I think it somehow goes even back farther to like some of that almost Velvet Underground-y
Wow,
stuff.
I was going to say the same thing. Just making more of an effort to sing than Lou Reed.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
Anyway.
I like the bonus track the most.
Further. I think it sounds like Eddie Cantor. Maybe even like Mozart.
So it sounds like a guy banging a stick on a rock.
I was going to say, like Chris's caveman guy. Yep. Yeah. So, well, make your own decisions. I think that between Baird and I have the correct position on this, but...
Well, I did say that I'm willing to keep trying, and that's rare. I make snap decisions about things, but there's enough on here that I like that maybe some of the clunkers will... That'll happen sometimes.
He's known me for 16 years, and he's still kind of figuring it out.
Nah, I'm still kind of meh on this guy. Like him about as much as the album. Half of Chris.
Yeah.
Right. All right. We gave him their $0 worth for sure. I'm just going to declare that. So it'll still be, should be definitely over an hour, even after I edit out all of Chris's parts. So
like I wasn't even here.
Right.
It's like de-Stalinization, like you just
right. Yeah, actually everybody, now it can be told that Chris wasn't really suspended. He's been here the whole time. He never listens. We know that he doesn't listen to it, so we just feel free to cut him out.
I just told you I listened to the Lacera.
Oh,
that's true.
It's busted. That was 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. No, I didn't mean that you don't listen to it, because I know that you do. That was just a gag. The only way that it would be plausible that we could cut you out of every episode and
that's
you wouldn't
true.
Know it. So
that's true.
If you always listened.
I'm much more likely to listen to the ones that I'm not on than the ones that I'm on. Because I was here and I know what I said, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I trust.
It's like when I read an article, like I'm not going to read it. I wrote it. I know what it says.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm on TV, I still haven't watched the thing that I was on MSNBC. I know what I said. I don't need to see it.
You know, I know a guy who's in Making a Murderer.
Oh.
That documentary.
Was his name Stephen Avery?
No comment. And I said, well, I asked him if he's watched it, and he said, nope, I lived it. He didn't want to go back. There were some aspects to that that you maybe wouldn't want to relive.
Was he on the prosecution team?
He was one of the defense lawyers for Dassey. Young guy.
Seems that you would want to watch it because it would, you know, it's kind of making your case.
Yeah.
Right?
Kind of.
Like, the Dassey's first defense attorney didn't come off very well.
Yeah, no. That's not the guy I know.
Okay, good.
I was
kind of like, you know, like pussyfooting around this.
Right.
Like,
right.
Because if it was him, like, he's cutting deals with the prosecution.
Yeah.
That show when it was out, it was, you couldn't, everybody's talking about it. Even on Dan Patrick, right? Like, Polly Pabst and Dan are like, did you watch me? Like, everybody's talking about it, but then it seems like it disappeared from the radar so fast.
Yeah, everybody just got done watching it and they were done.
I guess that's kind of the way things are.
I don't know. Today. The attorneys, you know, Avery's attorneys are... They're like doing tours. They're like playing rock shows. Like they play like Pabst Theater or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. But you
come
know.
See Jerry Buting and
Strang.
Dean Strang.
Yeah.
Right. But then again,
like
Blue Oyster Cult
stuff.
Is probably they're still playing and nobody talks about them anymore either.
Dean Strang's gonna move to Brooklyn and
for
start touring with like parquet
His office
courts.
Is right upstairs
Netflix
from yours, right?
Stardom.
The floor above mine, yes, indeed.
Well,
let's hope I never need him.
Anyway.
And you and Stephen Avery were you guys both worked in the kitchen at
where is this going? Yes.
Yeah. When
right
that thing that you were suspended for, and then you also went to jail for.
Oh, it all comes back.
Yeah,
Chris, Chris had nothing to do with incinerating the body, though. Nothing at all.
No, he might have moved a tooth or something, but yeah. That's really bad.
It was a minor thing.
I moved one tooth 5 feet over.
Yeah.
Just to make it more plausible.
All right, now...
Like, grisly murders are so funny. Like, why don't we talk about them more often?
Like, 90% really, of the listeners have no idea what we're talking about right now.
No, I think they probably do.
Some of them might, I guess.
Not the foreign ones. I don't think that's probably, you know...
Yes. We're talking about a TV show about a grisly murder that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see, how far away from us? Probably, you know, 100 miles or so, right? Not that far.
Yeah, not far at all from where,
shit,
where you grew 100
miles
up.
Is kind of close.
Yeah, it's 45 yeah. minutes from where I grew up. Not even.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that. And
you'll be the same distance from me because I was the other side of the lake.
Yeah, depends. Yeah. On the, you'd have to go around the top.
I'm sure this is all fascinating to everybody.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get out of here.
People who know a lot about Wisconsin geography might be interested.
Let's get out of here right
Six
now.
6 months from now when I'm on my next podcast, I'll come back and fact check that. I'll verify it.
So I've got a great sign-off. This is how we say it. We'll talk to you again next week, and we'll talk to Chris 6 months from now with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night. What's Chris going to say?
Stay sexy, everybody.
All right.
It's an honor of Prince.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @willsband. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.